God alone can give the increase of the seed we sow. We fail many times because we do not realize that Christ is with us by His Spirit as truly as when in the days of His humiliation He moved visibly upon the earth. The lapse of time has wrought no change in His parting promise to His apostles as He was taken up from them into heaven. Lo, I am with you alway, even unto the end of the world. He has ordained that there should be a succession of men who derive authority from the first teachers of the faith for the continual preaching of Christ and Him crucified. The great teacher has delegated power to His servants, who have this treasure in earthen vessels. Christ will superintend the work of His ambassadors if they wait for His instruction and guidance. Ministers who are truly Christ's representatives will be men of prayer. With an earnestness and faith that will not be denied, they will plead with God that they may be strengthened and fortified for duty and for trial, and that their lips may be sanctified by a touch of the living coal from off the altar to speak the words of God to the people. The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. He wakeneth morning by morning, he wakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. Christ said to Peter, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not. Who can estimate the result of the prayers of the world's Redeemer? When Christ shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied, then will be seen and realized the value of his earnest prayers while his divinity was veiled with humanity. Jesus pleaded not for one only, but for all his disciples. Father, I will that they also, whom thou hast given me, be with me where I am. His eye pierced the dark veil of the future and read the life history of every son and daughter of Adam. He felt the burdens and sorrows of every tempest-tossed soul, and that earnest prayer included with his living disciples all his followers to the close of time. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word. Yes, that prayer of Christ embraces even us. We should be comforted by the thought that we have a great intercessor in the heavens, presenting our petitions before God. If any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. In the hour of greatest need, when discouragement would overwhelm the soul, it is then that the watchful eye of Jesus sees that we need His help. The hour of man's necessity is the hour of God's opportunity. When all human support fails, then Jesus comes to our aid, and His presence scatters the darkness and lifts the cloud of doom. In their little boat upon the Sea of Galilee, amid the storm and darkness, the disciples toiled hard to reach the shore, but found all their efforts unsuccessful. As despair seized them, Jesus was seen walking upon the foam-capped billows. Even the presence of Christ they did not at first discern, and their terror increased until His voice, saying, "It is I, be not afraid," dispelled their fears and gave them hope and joy. Then how willingly the poor, wearied disciples ceased their efforts and trusted all to the Master. This striking incident illustrates the experience of the followers of Christ. How often do we tug at the oars as though our own strength and wisdom were sufficient, until we find our efforts useless. Then, with trembling hands and failing strength, we give up the work to Jesus and confess that we are unable to perform it. Our compassionate Redeemer pities our weakness, and when, in answer to the cry of faith, He takes up the work we ask Him to do, how easily He accomplishes that which seemed to us so difficult. The history of God's ancient people furnishes us with many encouraging examples of prevailing prayer. When the Amalekites came to attack the camp of Israel in the wilderness, Moses knew that his people were not prepared for the encounter. He sent Joshua with a band of soldiers to meet the enemy, while he himself, with Aaron and Hur, took his position on a hill overlooking the battlefield. There the man of God laid the case before him who alone was able to give them the victory. With hands outstretched toward heaven, Moses prayed earnestly for the success of the armies of Israel. It was observed that while his hands were reaching upward, Israel prevailed against the foe. But when through fatigue they were allowed to fall, Amalek prevailed. Aaron and Hur stayed up the hands of Moses until victory, full and complete, turned upon the side of Israel and their enemies were driven from the field. This instance was to be a lesson to all Israel to the close of time, that God is the strength of his people. When Israel triumphed, Moses was reaching his hands toward heaven and interceding in their behalf. So when all the Israel of God prevail, it is because the Mighty One undertakes their case and fights their battles for them. Moses did not ask or believe that God would overcome their foes while Israel remained inactive. He marshals all his forces and sends them out as well prepared as their facilities can make them, and then he takes the whole matter to God in prayer. Moses on the mount is pleading with the Lord, while Joshua with his brave followers is below, doing his best to meet and repulse the enemies of Israel and of God. That prayer which comes forth from an earnest, believing heart is the effectual, fervent prayer that availeth much. God does not always answer our prayers as we expect, for we may not ask what would be for our highest good, but in his infinite love and wisdom he will give us those things which we most need. Happy the minister who has a faithful Aaron and Hur to strengthen his hands when they become weary and to hold them up by faith and prayer. Such a support is a powerful aid to the servant of Christ in his work and will often make the cause of truth to triumph gloriously. After the transgression of Israel in making the golden calf, Moses again goes to plead with God in behalf of his people. He has some knowledge of those who have been placed under his care. He knows the perversity of the human heart and realizes the difficulties with which he must contend. But he has learned from experience that in order to have an influence with the people, he must first have power with God. The Lord reads the sincerity and unselfish purpose of the heart of his servant and condescends to commune with this feeble mortal face to face, as a man speaks with a friend. Moses casts himself and all his burdens fully upon God and freely pours out his soul before him. The Lord does not reprove his servant, but stoops to listen to his supplications. Moses has a deep sense of his unworthiness and his unfitness for the great work to which God has called him. He pleads with intense earnestness that the Lord will go with him. The answer comes, "My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest." But Moses does not feel that he can stop here. He has gained much, but he longs to come still nearer to God, to obtain a stronger assurance of his abiding presence. He has carried the burden of Israel. He has borne an overwhelming weight of responsibility. When the people sinned, he suffered keen remorse, as though he himself were guilty, and now there presses upon his soul a sense of the terrible results should God leave Israel to hardness and impenitence of heart. They would not hesitate to kill Moses, and through their own rashness and perversity they would soon fall a prey to their enemies and thus dishonor the name of God before the heathen. Moses presses his petition with such earnestness and fervency that the answer comes. I will do this thing also that thou hast spoken, for thou hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name. Now indeed we would expect the prophet to cease pleading, but no. Emboldened by his success, he ventures to come still nearer to God with a holy familiarity which is almost beyond our comprehension. He now makes a request which no human being ever made before. I beseech thee, show me thy glory. What a petition to come from a finite, mortal man! But is he repulsed? Does God reprove him for presumption? No, we hear the gracious words, I will make all my goodness pass before thee. The unveiled glory of God no man could look upon and live, but Moses is assured that he shall behold as much of the divine glory as he can bear in his present mortal state. That hand that made the world, that holds the mountains in their places, takes this man of dust, this man of mighty faith, and mercifully covers him in a cleft of the rock, while the glory of God and all his goodness pass before him. Can we marvel that the excellent glory reflected from omnipotence shone in Moses' face with such brightness that the people could not look upon it? The impress of God was upon him, making him appear as one of the shining angels from the throne. This experience, above all else the assurance that God would hear his prayer and that the divine presence would attend him, was of more value to Moses as a leader than the learning of Egypt or all his attainments in military science. No earthly power or skill or learning can supply the place of God's immediate presence. In the history of Moses, we may see what intimate communion with God it is man's privilege to enjoy. To the transgressor, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. But Moses was not afraid to be alone with the author of that law which had been spoken with such awful grandeur from Mount Sinai, for his soul was in harmony with the will of his Maker. Prayer is the opening of the heart to God as to a friend. The eye of faith will discern God very near, and the suppliant may obtain precious evidence of the divine love and care for him. But why is it that so many prayers are never answered? Says David, I cried unto him with my mouth, and he was extolled with my tongue. But if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. By another prophet, the Lord gives us the promise, Ye shall seek me and find me when ye shall search for me with all your heart. Again he speaks of some who have not cried unto me with their heart. Such petitions are prayers of form, lip service only, which the Lord does not accept. The prayer which Nathanael offered while he was under the fig tree came from a sincere heart, and it was heard and answered by the Master. Christ said of him, Behold an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. The Lord reads the hearts of all and understands their motives and purposes. The prayer of the upright is his delight. He will not be slow to hear those who open their hearts to him, not exalting self, but sincerely feeling their great weakness and unworthiness. There is need of prayer. Most earnest, fervent, agonizing prayer, such prayer as David offered when he exclaimed, As the hart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. I have longed after thy precepts. I have longed for thy salvation. My heart longeth, yea, even fainteth for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh crieth out for the living God. My soul breaketh for the longing that it hath unto thy judgments. This is the spirit of wrestling prayer, such as was possessed by the royal psalmist. Daniel prayed to God, not exalting himself or claiming any goodness. O Lord, hear, O Lord, forgive. O Lord, hearken and do. Defer not for thine own sake, O my God. This is what James calls the effectual fervent prayer. Of Christ, it is said, and being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly. In what contrast to this intercession by the majesty of heaven are the feeble, heartless prayers that are offered to God. Many are content with lip service, but few have a sincere, earnest, affectionate longing after God. Communion with God imparts to the soul an intimate knowledge of his will. But many who profess the faith know not what true conversion is. They have no experience in communion with the Father through Jesus Christ, and have never felt the power of divine grace to sanctify the heart. Praying and sinning, sinning and praying, their lives are full of malice, deceit, envy, jealousy, and self-love. The prayers of this class are an abomination to God. True prayer engages the energies of the soul and affects the life. He who thus pours out his wants before God feels the emptiness of everything else under heaven. All my desire is before thee, said David, and my groaning is not hid from thee. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? When I remember these things, I pour out my soul in me. As our numbers are increasing, broader plans must be laid to meet the increasing demands of the times. But we see no special increase of fervent piety, of Christian simplicity, and earnest devotion. The church seem content to take only the first steps in conversion. They are more ready for active labor than for humble devotion, more ready to engage in outward religious service than in the inner work of the heart. Meditation and prayer are neglected for bustle and show. Religion must begin with emptying and purifying the heart, and must be nurtured by daily prayer. The steady progress of our work and our increased facilities are filling the hearts and minds of many of our people with satisfaction and pride, which we fear will take the place of the love of God in the soul. Busy activity in the mechanical part of even the work of God may so occupy the mind that prayer shall be neglected, and self-importance and self-sufficiency, so ready to urge their way, shall take the place of true goodness, meekness, and lowliness of heart. The zealous cry may be heard, "The temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these. Come with me and see my zeal for the Lord." But where are the burden-bearers? Where are the fathers and mothers in Israel? Where are those who carry upon the heart the burden for souls and who come in close sympathy with their fellow men, ready to place themselves in any position to save them from eternal ruin? Not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Ye are, says Christ, the light of the world. What a responsibility! There is need of fasting, humiliation, and prayer over our decaying zeal and languishing spirituality. The love of many is waxing cold. The efforts of many of our preachers are not what they should be. When some who lack the Spirit and power of God enter a new field, they commence denouncing other denominations, thinking that they can convince the people of the truth by presenting the inconsistencies of the popular churches. It may seem necessary on some occasions to speak of these things, but in general it only creates prejudice against our work and closes the ears of many who might otherwise have listened to the truth. If these teachers were connected closely with Christ, they would have divine wisdom to know how to approach the people. They would not so soon forget the darkness and error, the passion and prejudice which kept themselves from the truth. Would these teachers work with the spirit of the Master, very different results would follow. With meekness and long-suffering, gentleness and love, yet with decided earnestness, they would seek to direct these erring souls to a crucified and risen Savior. When this is done, we shall see God moving upon the hearts of men. Says the great apostle, "We are laborers together with God." What a work for poor mortals! We are provided with spiritual weapons to fight the good fight of faith, but some seem to have drawn from the armory of heaven only its thunderbolts. How long must these defects exist? While in the midst of a religious interest, some neglect the most important part of the work. They fail to visit and become acquainted with those who have shown an interest to present themselves night after night to listen to the explanation of the Scriptures. Conversation upon religious subjects and earnest prayer with such at the right time might balance many souls in the right direction. Ministers who neglect their duty in this respect are not true shepherds of the flock. At the very time when they should be most active in visiting, conversing, and praying with these interested ones, some will be employed in writing unnecessarily long letters to persons at a distance. Oh, what are we doing for the Master? When probation shall end, how many will see the opportunities they have neglected to render service to their dear Lord who died for them? And even those who were accounted most faithful will see much more that they might have done had not their minds been diverted by worldly surroundings. We entreat the heralds of the gospel of Christ never to become discouraged in the work, never to consider the most hardened sinner beyond the reach of the grace of God. Such may accept the truth in the love of it and may become the salt of the earth. He who turns the hearts of men as the rivers of water are turned can bring the most selfish, sin-hardened soul to surrender to Christ. Is aught too hard for God to do? "My word," he says, "shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereunto I sent it." God will not place his benediction upon those who are negligent, selfish, and ease-loving, who will not lift burdens in his cause. The "well done" will be pronounced upon those only who have done well. Every man is to be rewarded according as his work shall be. We want an active ministry, men of prayer who will wrestle with God as did Jacob, saying, "I will not let thee go except thou bless me." If we obtain the victor's crown, we must stretch every nerve and exercise every power. We can never be saved in inactivity. To be an idler in the Lord's vineyard is to relinquish all title to the reward of the righteous.
Chapter 2, Warnings and Admonitions.
November 23, 1879. Some things were shown me in reference to the institutions among us and the duties and dangers of those who occupy a leading position in connection with them. I saw that these men have been raised up to do a special work as God's instruments, to be led, guided, and controlled by His Spirit. They are to answer the claims of God and never to feel that they are their own property and that they can employ their powers as they shall deem most profitable to themselves. Although it is their purpose to be and to do right, yet they will most surely err unless they are constant learners in the school of Christ. Their only safety is in humbly walking with God. Dangers beset every path, and he who comes off conqueror will indeed have a triumphant song to sing in the city of God. Some have strong traits of character that will need to be constantly repressed. If kept under the control of the Spirit of God, these traits will be a blessing, but if not, they will prove a curse. If those who are now riding upon the wave of popularity do not become giddy, it will be a miracle of mercy. If they lean to their own wisdom, so as many thus situated have done, their wisdom will prove to be foolishness. But while they shall give themselves unselfishly to the work of God, never swerving in the least from principle, the Lord will throw about them the everlasting arm and will prove to them a mighty helper. Them that honor me, I will honor. This is a dangerous age for any man who has talents which can be of value in the work of God. For Satan is constantly plying his temptations upon such a person, ever trying to fill him with pride and ambition. And when God would use him, it is too often the case that he becomes independent and self-sufficient, and feels capable of standing alone. This will be your danger, brethren, unless you have a life of constant faith and prayer. You may have a deep and abiding sense of eternal things and that love for humanity which Christ has shown in his life. A close connection with heaven will give the right tone to your fidelity and will be the ground of your success. Your feeling of dependence will drive you to prayer, and your sense of duty summon you to effort. Prayer and effort, effort and prayer will be the business of your life. You must pray as though the efficiency and praise were all due to God, and labor as though duty were all your own. If you want power, you may have it. It is waiting your draft upon it.